Two of them, I am there. Two or more.
So, every day we are reading a little
The connector instructions to the letters that is run on this AC button and the button box. Still loud?
Okay. Thank you. So Malati read that long letter yesterday. This is called BTG, The Importance. Everyone is familiar with the Godhead magazine. Prabhupada began that Bhakti the Godhead in 1944. And since then, he was expanded now into what we have today. And then it was only a few small pages, maybe one or two pages, where Prabhupada would write some philosophical point, and then he would go out. He would have it printed himself, and then he would, once it was printed, he would take them and go out and distribute them on the streets himself. He would be going around doing his distribution, asking for a few pice for one copy of Bhakti Godhead. So that was how the movement really began with his publications. Prabhupada put his heart and soul in this publication called Bhakti Godhead, and it's actually the standard message for the world, and you see now it's published in so many languages. Just recently, we have a Marathi edition of Bhakti Godhead. We have Hindi, Gujarati, Marathi. So more and more, as more people are taking to Krishna consciousness, we're expanding the different languages. Of course, many of the major countries in the world have their own BTG publications. But Prabhupada wanted this message to go out everywhere. And he wanted Bhakti Godhead to be a magazine where it showed the glories of Krishna consciousness, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the lifestyle of Krishna consciousness. He didn't want it as a magazine for polemics and philosophical debates so much. Of course, that's sometimes there, but mostly he wanted it as a magazine to show, what the devotees were doing everywhere, some of the philosophical points. This is one book of UIT. It's been published recently, a few years ago. It's the old copies of Srila Prabhupada's Bhakti Godhead. It was put into a book, and you can read it and see some of the old ones. Really nice stories. So this is continuation. This is a letter to Ray Ram on the 30th of January, 1967. I am in due receipt of your letter of the 26th instant. The service proposal is very nice, and I approve of your acceptance of this job. Not only your income will be great help to the society, but also it will be a great opportunity for learning how to organize our magazine, Bhakti Godhead. This Bhakti Godhead, it will always remain the backbone of the society, because the more the magazine is popular, the more our society becomes popular. Very strong statement. So your ambition should always be how to improve the quality of the paper so that it may be read by all respectable persons. In future, we may have one French edition of this paper. And our Bhakti Godhead, if our Bhakti Godhead goes on nicely, then we can have all our publications without waiting for any other publishers. End of letter. Here's another letter to Ray Ram on March 1967. We must publish our books as much as possible because that will create our position. Bhakti Godhead should be the life and soul for the society. Please let me know your program. So this devotees also, when we first began our movement in the West, devotees were going out with little sticks of incense and Bhakti Godhead magazine, approaching people on the streets for donations like that. So Bhakti Godhead has always been something that Srila Prabhupada wanted circulated as much as possible. This is another letter to Ray Ram, August 1967. Please give your primary attention for improving Bhakti Godhead, the backbone of our movement. End of letter. A quote from the letter. This letter is to Brahmananda, the 11th of November, 1967. Please carefully handle the dealings with Macmillan Company, which was begun by your good self. If publications are there, we can work from one center only, like New York or San Francisco, for propagating our cult all over the world. Let us stick to the publication of Bhakti Gandhi more and more nicely, and publish some big literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, etc. Prabhupada's already talking in 1967 about doing Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is also to Brahmananda, the 18th of November, 1967. Regarding Back to Godhead, it is understood that Ray Ram is in some difficulty financially. The recent edition of Back to Godhead is very much encouraging to me. The standard should be maintained and improved so that one day it may be on the level of such magazines as Life, Time, etc. If he is in difficulty financially, I think you can give him a loan of $500 to be paid in monthly installments of $100. So here. It's interesting how much energy, effort, and time Prabhupada put in this. He gave a lot of points on how he wanted Bhakti Gandhi. Maybe some of you have seen some of the old editions of Bhakti Gandhi magazine, which were quite nice because the older ones had a lot of Harinam Sankirtan, devotees in Boston, devotees in New York, devotees in Los Angeles, San Francisco, the beginning temples, and you would see many, many photos of devotees doing Harinam Sankirtan. And that's pretty much our... I mean, if people know us by two things. They don't know us so much by, you know, deity worship or anything. They know us by Harinam Sankirtan and book distribution in airports. Really, that's how they know us. Anyway, we were out there with the public doing our preaching. That's how they know us. They always connect us with either airports or chanting on the street corner somewhere, in some place. So Prabhupada wanted that in Bhakti Gandhi magazine as being a way of people, you know, really understanding Krishna consciousness. So I'll read one more, and this is a little longer. This is also to Ray Ram, 23rd of March, 1968. You should take Bhakti Gandhi as your life and soul. Your work for Bhakti Gandhi is first and foremost above all. Actually, His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj took up the responsibility of Bhakti Gandhi after the Ray Ram, which was in the early days. And Jayadvaita Maharaj was doing that service for 20 years, maybe more. Just recently, last year, or about a year ago, he left the English publication, a Lima English publication, as Bhakti Gandhi editor, and now he's working in India and developing Marathi and Hindi and Gujarati ones. But he gave practically his life and soul. If you read any of the old Bhakti Gandhi's, there's always a letter from the editor. It was always by Jayadvaita Maharaj. He would always give some wonderful philosophical point. But he put his life into that, and Prabhupada really, really showed his blessing upon that. If you do not find any time for other things, there's no objection. But I want to see that you make Bhakti Gandhi a successful magazine like Life or Illustrated Weekly of India. I am very much ambitious of the progress of the paper. You can use your discretion how to do it. We are at liberty to do it with full power of attorney. So far, discussions of political affairs and Bhakti Gandhi, it is not a very good suggestion. But if you can present political affairs in spiritual line, as I wrote some articles in the original Bhakti Gandhi, in the matter of political divisions of India and catastrophes thereof, that requires a very thorough understanding of what the whole situation is. And if you can do this, it will be a great service. I wanted, therefore, a combined editorial board. Unfortunately, you have to do everything yourself. For this work, I think you'll have to invite cooperation from others who may help you. Anyway, Bhakti Gandhi must be improved to the fullest extent because it is the backbone of our society. Think it over and do it nicely as far as possible. And if necessary, you can stop any other activities. But people like your lectures also, and I hope you are delivering your nice lectures in their classes. For the time being, you stop thinking of Srimad Bhagavatam, and we will make plans when I meet you in New York. It is very nice that you're preparing a book on the life of Lord Chaitanya. Also, if you can get the Ishopanishads printed, that is very nice. Part of it is in the original Bhakti Godhead, and part of it is there in manuscript. As for the Brahma Samhita, I'm not working on it at the present moment, but I have thought of it, but I will see to it later on. End of letter. Prabhupada wanted magazines, publications, books, everywhere. Shivaki Siddhanta Maharaj used to say, you play the mridanga, and you hear the mridanga maybe one block, some radius, maybe half a mile, some sound vibrations there. But when you make this publication, philosophical, points on Krishna consciousness, you distribute it. He said, this is called Brihad Mridanga. It's the great mridanga for spreading Krishna consciousness everywhere. So, these books, if we want to really get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, I mean, there's so many ways you can get Prabhupada's mercy, but one way you want to get mercy is distributing books. If that service, more than anything, will really bring Prabhupada special mercy, because that was Prabhupada's personal instruction from his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He told him, if you ever get money, print books. Prabhupada used to say, this is how the communists were able to be so successful with their propaganda, the mass literature distribution everywhere in the world. Also the Jehovah Witnesses, they would go door to door distributing their watchtower. Maybe some of you in your early in your life have been approached by Jehovah Witnesses in your house. I know I have at least 3 or 4 times I can remember, different times. They come crashing into your door, they take up a residence in your house like they're one of the family members. You can't get rid of them. But they're so enthusiastic and they're so fixed on their distribution that just to see that type of conviction and enthusiasm, people are more or less somewhat inspired by that. So also Prabhupada put a lot of emphasis on book distribution and, you know, that type of preaching. Okay, so any questions, comments? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 20th chapter, verse number 10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Manasvina Kun Karunikasya Shobanam Vyar Artikamopanayena Dorgatahi Kutra Purnar Rama Vidam Bhavadrisham Tato Tavatur Asya Dami Vanchitam Manasvina Kuninga Kasya Shobanam Manasvina Karunikasya Shobanam Yadartha Kamopanayena Gudurgatihi Yad arti kamo banihena durgatihi Kutapunam brahma vidam bhavashvidam Tapuna Brahma Vidam Bavardusham Tato Vato Asyad Dham Vivansitam Tato Vato Asyad Dham Vivansitam Manasmina Karunikasya Syovanam Yaratikamo Panayen Durgatahi Kutatpuna Brahma Vidamba Vardrisam Tatot Vatu Asya Dadam Ivanchitam Of persons who are greatly munificent, Kurunikasya, a person celebrated as very merciful, Shobanam, very auspicious, Yat, that, Arti, of persons in need of money, Kama Upanayena, by satisfying, Durgatihi, becoming poverty stricken. Everybody can chant. It's not, you don't have to be, a certain age group to chant. You can all chant. Everybody responds. It makes everything, this is the idea. Word for word means I say and then you say. It's not that I say and you look. Get into it. It's fun, really. It's a participatory sport. Some sports are spectators and some are participatory. You get to play, Okay. Kuta. What? Puna. Again. It is to be said. Brahma Vidam. Of persons well versed in transcendental science. Brahma Vidya. Bhavardusham, like your good self, tata, therefore, vato, of the brahmachari, asya, of this brahmanadev, dadami, I shall give, vanchitam, whatever he wants. Translation and purport, by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. By giving charity, a benevolent and merciful person undoubtedly becomes even more auspicious, especially when he gives charity to a person like your good self. Under the circumstances, I must give this brahmachari whatever charity he wants from me. Purport. If one accepts a poverty-stricken position because of losing money in business, gambling, prostitution, or intoxication, no one will praise him. But if one becomes poverty-stricken by giving all his possessions in charity, he becomes adored all over the world. Aside from this, if a benevolent and merciful person exhibits his pride in becoming poverty-stricken by giving his possessions in charity for good causes, his poverty is a welcome and auspicious sign of a great personality. Bali Maharaj decided that even though he would become poverty-stricken by giving everything to Vamanadeva, this is what he would prefer. Translation again, please repeat. By giving charity, a benevolent and merciful person undoubtedly becomes even more auspicious, especially when he gives charity to a person like your good self. Under the circumstances, I must give this little brahmachari whatever charity he wants from me. Om Agyanti Midam Dasyan Gina Jenak Salakaya Taksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaham Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Statikam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swam Dadatikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramutananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaudha Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Bali Maharaj, Vamanadeva has come to beg charity on behalf of the demigods in order to recapture the possession that Bali Maharaj had taken from the demigods in the big fight. And Bali Maharaj had now become the sole possessor of all the everything in creation due to his military power. And now Vamanadeva is there, and he comes as a beggar. Bali Maharaj was very much noted to be a very charitable person. Whatever Brahmins would come, he would give. That is the nature of Kshatriyas. Kshatriya means to give in charity. Kshatriyas do not take charity for themselves, but they give charity. They collect taxes, and they give that taxes back to the people in the form of whatever material necessities are required in order to maintain nice, happy life within society. So the Kshatriyas are by nature very charitably disposed. Sometimes even they're so charitably disposed that they will give everything and anything, even their personal life, if they are approached by a saintly person. So this is the nature of the Kshatriya. Even we have the story of Jarasandha. Remember Jarasandha in Krishna book? How Krishna wanted to somehow or other eliminate all the kings that were against King Yudhisthira. And Jarasandha was one of the kings. He was a demoniac king. So Krishna had defeated his army so many times, but still he was still powerful. And one of his qualities was that he was very, very inclined to the Brahmins. Very inclined to the Brahmins. Whenever Brahmins would come, he would welcome them, he would give them a place to stay, he would give them sweet words, and whatever they wanted, he would give. And so Krishna decided to play a trick. So he came along with Bhima and Arjuna and himself. And Krishna was in the role of a Kshatriya at that time. He was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And they came and they dressed themselves up as saintly Brahmins. And when they came to the court of Jarasandha, Jarasandha didn't even recognize them as Kshatriyas at first. He said, "Oh, please come." He gave them everything. He said, asked them, "Is there anything that you want?" He said, "Yes, we have come to beg something from you." "What is that?" "We want to fight you." So they wanted to fight with Jarasandha. So he laughed. And then Krishna revealed himself as Krishna. And he said, "Krishna, I'm not going to fight you. You're a coward. Every time I was fighting with you, you ran from the battlefield. You left. So I'm not going to fight you." And Arjuna, he's not my equal. He's just a young boy. But Bhima, he's more my equal. So he took that charitable request to fight, and then ultimately he was defeated by Bhima. When Krishna gave Bhima the trick on how Jarasandha was actually born, Jarasandha, Jara means witch. He was born from a witch called Jara, who, when he was born, his mother gave his birth in two parts. His body came out in two sections, right down the middle. So she just threw the two parts of the baby into the forest. Useless baby. So Jara was living in the forest, and she was a witch, and she had mystic powers, and she took the two parts of Jarasandha's body and put them together, and he became Jarasandha, one who is connected by the witch Jara. So Bhima, when he was fighting Jarasandha, he couldn't defeat him, because both of them were equally powerful. It's explained that Bhima had the strength of 10,000 elephants, and Jarasandha also. And so the fight went on day after day after 27 days. And Bhima was getting tired. So Krishna finally gave him a trick. He broke a twig, a little stick, indicating that, yes, you can beat him. He just pulled his body apart. So at one point he grabbed both legs and he just pulled them apart. And his body was back the way it was before he was born. And he died, of course. So we find that even great demoniac kings were very charitable. And here, what was Bali? Bali was the king of the demons. He had conquered the entire universe, but he was willing to give charity to a saintly Brahmana. But his spiritual master, Sukracharya, said, you know, giving in charity should not be at the expense of one's personal interest. If you give in charity and your own interest is sacrificed, then your fame, your reputation will also be lost. One should not give charity at the expense of one's own personal comfort. But who was Sukracharya? Although he was the spiritual master of Bali Maharaj, he was a seminal Brahmana. He wasn't what we could say a Vaishnava guru. He was simply what we call a family priest. Sometimes we find that people, they have in their life a family priest, but it's more ritualistic, it's more materialistic, it's in the mode of pious activities rather than the mode of devotional service. I think we're getting a little... Is there some construction going on, or is that the garbage truck? Trash. In India, they have better garbage trucks. They're called the dogs and the hogs. They make less noise. They just come and scoop up the trash. So he was giving Bali all kinds of materialistic reasons why he shouldn't give him charity. And then he said, ultimately, this is Vishnu, and if you give him some promise and some charity, he'll take everything away from you. So Bali listened to his spiritual master. And then he became silent. And after he became silent, he started to speak. And he described the history of great souls who gave everything. Maharaj Sibi, Maharaj Ranti Dev, he didn't eat for, I think it was 49 days. He was fasting. So he was about to break his fast. And Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they decided to test Ranti Dev. So first they came in disguise of a hunter, and they begged some food. And gradually, one after another, different persons come, and Ranti Dev was giving all the food away after he had been fasting for 49 days. So, finally he had nothing left. He had nothing to eat. But he was glorious because he gave in charity to those who needed that, even at his own expense. So he became famous. And we read from the previous verse that what is the most tangible thing in it? It's fame. And that, of course, a devotee never really wants to be famous. To be famous means to, you know, pursue after some mysterious distinction. Material reputation. The devotee wants to make Krishna famous, but Krishna wants to make the devotee famous. So it's a competition, just like we see His divine grace. They see Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. He's becoming more and more known throughout the world as the founder, Acharya, the great spiritual personality of the Hare Krishna movement, who's bringing God consciousness to everywhere in the world. One becomes a devotee of the Lord, and one does something for the good of the world, one becomes famous. Of course, the devotee never wants fame, but it follows him. Hare Krishna. I was giving a class the other day, a couple weeks ago, in Washington, D.C., and I was talking about the machine age, how people can't live without machines. Machine age. You have a machine for waking up, you have a machine for keeping you awake. Computers, televisions, VCRs, cars, you name it, there's something to plug in right at every moment. People are more or less, they live by machines, machines for collecting your garbage. And then they have machines now for chewing up your garbage. There's a machine for everything, practically. A machine to brush your teeth. And a machine to tell you what time it is. Everything. You can see the benefits of machines here. And people are so attached to machines. Anyway, Bali Maharaj, he didn't listen to his spiritual master. He gave all good reasons why he should respond to the plea of Lord Ramadev. That here Prabhupada explains in the purport that if one gives or loses all of one's possessions or one's money simply because of some business adventure or some gambling or some illegal activity, one becomes condemned by that. They lose their money and they're often condemned. But if one somehow loses all their possessions, all their money, because they do something good for the world, they become glorified. So we see in the life of a devotee, when we come to Krishna consciousness and we have so much, sometimes material possessions, money and so many other things, and as we surrender these things, actually Krishna becomes more and more available. And one of the things that is important to understand that in Krishna consciousness we have to give up attachments to everything, especially our material possessions. Material possessions are a kind of a form of sense gratification. But devotees, when they come sometimes to Krishna consciousness, they have so many material possessions. And Krishna, he works in such a way as to gradually bring us to his lotus feet by taking away our material possessions, our material attachments. So we're attached to these things. And sometimes when we give them up, we wonder, well, what's going to happen to me? Will I be okay? But ultimately, it is explained that devotee, everything belongs to Krishna anyway. And whatever we give to Krishna is just returning what Krishna is really giving to us. So there's two things. One should use material possessions in the service of Krishna. And one should not accumulate material possessions in order for one's own sense gratification. Because one of the main obstacles in one's spiritual life is atyahara. Atyahara means too much eating or too much collecting. Too many collecting of material things also makes it impossible for one to perform devotional service, because one finds some kind of shelter in these material things. Just imagine if you had nothing. You had no money, no possessions, one set of clothes and a beat bag. Just imagine yourself in that position. What would you think? That I'm in a bad position? Ultimately, you're not in any worse position than you were if you had the whole world, actually, if you're a devotee. Because ultimately, if you can chant the holy names of the Lord, that is the real wealth, and that is the real happiness. So sometimes we should think like that. We should separate ourselves. And just imagine if Krishna took everything away from us. What would I do? Would I go out and try to get it all back again? Or would I become less enthusiastic? Or would I would see it as an opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness? And you see in the life of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada was destined to be one of the richest men in India. On the level, he said, on the level of Bila. Bila. You know old Bila? Bila. He's very rich. wouldn't there be a lot? What is he famous for?
Aditya Birla. Aditya Birla.
What's he, what is his, what does he manufacture, Birla?
Everything.
Yeah, everything.
Cement.
Birla cement. Yes, to Birla cement. Trunks. And then you have Tata. And then you have Mukutmal. And so many families. Rich. Prabhupada was told by the astrologer that he would be as rich as Birla. The multi-millionaire Prabhupada. But Prabhupada gave it all up to become Krishna conscious. Gave up his family, gave up his job, gave up his destiny to become a to spread Krishna consciousness around the world, to engage in devotional service. So Prabhupada, sometimes he would come back to India and he would give his one lecture. Maybe some of you remember that lecture. Prabhupada is talking. That I came to America with 40 rupees. Well, what's 40 rupees? Really, Prabhupada came to America with nothing because you can't spend any rupees in America. So sometimes they say 40 rupees, but what's 40 rupees? It's useless in America. Right? So Prabhupada had no money when he came to America. He said, now we are spending every day 4 lakhs of rupees. Every day we're spending that much. 40 lakhs. So when Prabhupada started to spread Krishna consciousness, Krishna gave him temples, devotees, money, facility. Prabhupada never took anything for himself. As fast as it would come in, he would go give it out, use it to spread Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada, you know, he was always eating just a little bit. He was never attached to any situation. In fact, one time, he was sitting in a very plush, fancy hotel in Boston, was surrounded by a few of his disciples. Very nicely decorated first-class hotel, and only set arranged for Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you know, he said, actually, I really sometimes hanker to be back in my Radha Damodar room back in Vrindavan, sitting there and just, you know, enjoying the life in Vrindavan, being in Vrindavan. You've seen Prabhupada's room in Vrindavan, Radha Damodar temple. Two small rooms. We were there this year. You squeeze about 20 devotees into one room. You can really squeeze them in. Really tiny room. And Prabhupada lived in there. And that time, it was much more simple. There was one light hanging from the wall, from the ceiling, coming down with a bulb. And the floor was a dirt floor. And there was nothing. Prabhupada had one table, and that was it. He was doing his translation. Then he had a little, next door, there was a little tiny kitchen where he would do his cooking. And Prabhupada said, I hanker to go back to that. But then he said, for me to go back to that's sense gratification. So Prabhupada was seeing that as sense gratification. And all this fancy stuff that he was doing, he saw this as simply some botheration. But he accepted it as an opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness. Because in the West, unless you have some facility, unless you have a program, people will not be attracted. We don't need these big temples. We don't need fancy cars. We don't need anything. But in order to carry on the preaching mission, we use them. We use these things only so we can attract others and give them a chance to engage in Krishna consciousness. Especially people in the West, they see anything simple as being an example of poverty-stricken or downtroddenness. So Prabhupada wanted to spread a worldwide movement. At the same time, he wanted to do something so grand for Krishna that people would come and be attracted to that. But for himself, you know, some chapatis, some sabji, you know, a little place to sleep. Prabhupada was happy wherever he was. He never demanded anything. So that's Krishna consciousness, that we should not be attached to anything material, because ultimately everything is going to be taken away. Nor should we endeavor to try to accumulate material things. If they come, they come. If they come, we figure out how to use them for Krishna consciousness. And that's our mindset. I was just with His Holiness Radhanath
Swami Maharaj.
He's the most, one of the most intense sannyasis I've ever seen in my life. It's amazing. He was cleaning out his room the night before we came. And so he's got all this Lakshmi that people have been giving him since the time he's in New Vrindavan, so they give him money. So they were counting it up, all the devotees saying. So it was like $2,000 in cash or something.
He gave it all away?
Gave it to the temple. Didn't take a penny for himself. Gave him $2,000, gave it away. Gives it to the devotees for different projects and stuff. So, we can see that this energy, this material things is Krishna's energy, it's meant to be used for Krishna's service. And as you use Krishna's energy for Krishna's service, what happens? Krishna gives you more. And then you take that and use it, and Krishna gives you more. You take that and use it, and Krishna gives you more. You take that and use it, and gives you more. But as soon as we try to accumulate it and try to enjoy it, then Krishna stops giving it. So Bali Maharaj, he understood, yes, the actual purpose is to give everything to God. So he had no problem when Vamanadi was begging. And he understood that ultimately he was going to lose everything. But he understood the principle. And at the same time, he had given his word. He was more for Kshatriya to give his word and to go back on his word is like, it's worse than death. Nowadays, people, they say something, but they don't really mean it. Or if they say something, they have some meaning to it. But later on, if that saying interferes with one's interests, then one will say, well, better not to go ahead with that because my interest is at stake. So, but that is not very, very Krishna conscious. Sometimes devotees take vows. Yes, I'll get up in the morning every day for Mangal Arati and I'll never miss, I'm going to do it. But then sometimes Krishna tests you and just to see. And then, or every day I'm going to chant 16 rounds without fail. And Krishna makes it hard sometimes just to see whether you're ready to do it. Or I'm going to take a vow of never speaking or japa. And you find yourself in the midst of others and you get tested. So, or I'm going to study Prabhupada's books. And then you find yourself being pulled away. So when we make a vow sometimes, we find that Krishna tests the determination of that vow by giving us some obstacles. So one should be determined upon all situations to go ahead and to fulfill one's needs within Krishna consciousness. So here's a good, very good example of how, by giving to God, what happened to Bali Maharaj? He became a Mahajan. He was a demon. He was born in the family of Prahlad Maharaj. In that sense, he was glorious. His father was Virochana, and Virochana's father was Prahlad. So Bali Maharaj's his grandfather was Prahlad Maharaj, but still he was in the family of Daityas. And he had to attack Indra, the demigods, and he was leading the demons against the demigods. But because he surrendered everything to the Lord, he's actually known as one of the 12 Mahajans. He can give spiritual direction and instructions simply by his position. And so much so, as you read on to this verse, that the Lord agreed to become his personal servant. He gave him a position in the lower planetary systems, Sutala, one of the lower planets, and the Lord came there in the form of Vamanadeva to be his doorkeeper. So Bali Maharaj is noted to surrendering everything to the Lord. He gave all his everything away, and then he gave his life to the Lord. So the real purport of this whole pastime is that the more you give to Krishna, the more you get for yourself. Sometimes we calculate, how much should I give to Krishna? I can surrender a little bit today, but not, or it's against my interest and I won't surrender. No, we actually have to see that by watering the root of the tree, the flowers, the branches, the twigs, everything becomes nourished by that watering. By serving Krishna, Krishna gives us everything and more. Prabhupada said, what can you give with Krishna with two hands? He can give back with 10 hands. He's taking with 10 hands what you give with two. And he's giving with 10 hands what you can hold in two. So what can you hold with 2 hands when he has 10 hands? He's giving you with 10 hands. So the idea is that we should try to give everything we can to Krishna. And the more we give to Krishna, the more we become happy. And that is the actual process. And that is Krishna consciousness. Okay, so that's Bali Maharaj's. Any questions? Comments on anything? Yes, Mother Tina?
Yeah, Maharaj, I was thinking so, like, maybe you should make me a vow. Why don't you just do that? Then you feel better about yourself.
You should, before you make a vow, you should think that before I make this vow, am I going to keep it under all circumstances? Or am I just making the vow because I feel enthusiastic at this one moment? And therefore I'm ready. Just like people come, they shave up. But after a while, Krishna tests you. If you move into the temple, you engage in Krishna consciousness, then you get tested. And you have to pass the test. So the question is, before we do anything, we should be ready to, willing to sacrifice anything, whatever we have to do in order to maintain that. This is a kind of quality, it's a quality of nobility. When I say something, or when I do something, I'm going to carry it through. A person who says something and doesn't carry it through, or does something and doesn't, and changes his mind due to the circumstances, nobody can trust that person, nor can they trust themselves. So make vows, yes, but go ahead and follow them. Be willing to carry out that vow in all circumstances. And what is the most important vow? On your initiation day, you say, I will chant 16 rounds Hare Krishna beads, I will follow the four regulative principles, and I will engage in devotional service for the rest of my life. That is the vow. So one has to think, whether before they take initiation, am I going to do that under all circumstances? Am I willing to give my life to that vow? If we're not, then we should not take initiation. But when you're convinced, when you're determined, and by your determination you get Krishna's help, and Krishna's mercy, then go ahead and do it. So vows we should take, but we should always think beforehand, am I ready to make this vow under all circumstances? So in one sense, your point is good. You shouldn't make a vow unless you're going to keep it. Okay. All right? Does that satisfy your answer?
Yeah, but you know, when you know why do you have to test it? Why do you have to test it?
Well, what don't you like about being tested?
Huh?
What don't you like about being tested?
I just don't like being tested, but, you know, first of all, if you know I'm so smart that I'm not a tester, I didn't have to take a test and feel even worse. To that. And then I feel worse. So I feel better than I took the test.
Very good philosophy. Remain stupid then. It's the remain stupid philosophy. I don't want to take any test because I'm stupid and I'll fail the test, so I'll just be stupid and nobody will know I'm stupid. Life is a test. Just to live, you have to confront different obstacles in your existence, even in material life. But the thing about being tested in Krishna consciousness, Krishna will not test you beyond your ability to pass the test. That we have to understand. You have within your capacity to pass every test. But you have to reach out for the mercy of the spiritual master. You have to reach out for the mercy of Krishna to give you the intelligence and ability to pass the test. That is why Krishna tests you, just so you become more attached to Him. If you are faced with a test and you use your own calculations and your own logic and abilities to pass it, you know, there's a good chance you won't. So tests are meant to help us become more attached to Krishna. And they also help us become purified from our attachments. You will be tested. The ultimate test is you're going to have to die. And you have to sit there and your body's about ready to go. And what are you going to say? Krishna, I'm not ready for this test. And so you have to be ready. We're all being tested. So pass the easy test, and then even when you get the chance to pass the real test, which is remembering Krishna with great love at the time of death, then you'll be ready for that test. If you're not ready for that test, and what happens? You come back again in this life, in the next life, and you get a chance to get tested again. So why not pass the test now? You have to anyway. You can't run from the test. Ultimately, face the test. But it's not like a materialist facing test, because a devotee has Krishna, Krishna's mercy there. With Krishna's mercy, anything is possible. Mukam karoti va chalam pangu lagite kire yat kripa tanaham mande siduru divatarinu. That a blind man can see the stars, a deaf man can recite beautiful poetry, and a layman can climb mountains. This is the power of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, I would be successful beyond my greatest imagination, my greatest expectation. Why? Because of Krishna. Shoot for the rhino. And Prabhupada said, shoot for the rhino. What does that mean? The hardest animal to capture is the rhino. It's dangerous to try to hunt rhinos. But if you capture one, it's considered a great achievement. And if you don't, no one will say, oh, he failed. No, it's impossible. It's very difficult. So in our Krishna consciousness, we should go for the best. Try to become a pure devotee in this life. Don't become a middle-of-the-road devotee. You know, a little Krishna here, a little sense gratification here. You know, we'll never be happy. It says there's only two kinds of people. It says in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's only two types of people who are happy. The gross fool, who's completely intoxicated by material sense gratification, he doesn't know what misery is because he's so much in it, he actually thinks he's happy. And the transcendentalist, who is on the topmost platform of spiritual life, who's enjoying the happiness of Krishna consciousness. Everyone in between those two people are suffering and enjoying accordingly. So, try to become the pure devotee. Everybody can become pure devotee. If you want Krishna bad enough, you get Krishna. If you don't want him, or you just want some middle of the road, you can never stabilize yourself in any middle position. You can't, because material energy just keeps pressuring you and pushing you back. You're forced to react to your situations. You have to take a stand. So better to fight, better to try hard, than to just, you know, try to hide and just get by. The more you try to just get by, the more miserable you are. The more you exert your enthusiasm and determination in your spiritual life, the more happy you are, because you immediately bring Krishna's mercy. Immediately, as soon as you become fired up, you bring Krishna's mercy. He sees that, oh, my devotee's enthusiastic, let me help him. That's Krishna consciousness. Okay? And then actually the tests actually become an opportunity. Devotees look forward to tests because they're an opportunity. Well, here's a chance to make some advancement. The test is, oh, here's a chance that I can actually move forward. Any other questions? Comments? Okay. Thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Thank you.
Paramahansa so far Adagacharya has to tell us that this evening on his divine grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Iskand Dhamma Acharya Srila Prabhupada, Rajkantra Sriman Bhagavatamki, Srila Sanatana Goswami Srila Bhakti, Harinam Sankirtanki, Haridai Gaur Vaivandi. Glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the answered devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Switch off the light, we don't really need the lights. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today is actually Purnima. Those of you who don't know what Purnima is, it's the full moon. And so, also today is a beginning of the Chaturmasya. Those of you who do not know what Chaturmasya is, there's 4 months beginning today that we fast from various foodstuffs. For 1 month, there's no green leafy vegetables. That is, whatever falls into the category of green leafy vegetables. That begins on the full moon of this month, and it goes to the next full moon. After that 1 month, then there's a fast from yogurt. No yogurt for 1 month. And after that month, there's a fast of milk. No milk for 1 month. And then the last is ertal, which is a kind of dal bean, and we fast from that. So this is called the Chaturmasya. In India, it's the rainy season, and during this time, the saints, they travel to different holy places. They stay in one holy place. They stop their travel for these 4 months, and they perform their bhajan, chanting or preaching, but no travel. Because the rainy season is very difficult to travel in. So these 4 months, so Srila Prabhupada wanted us to follow at least part of the Chaturmasya. The actual performance of Chaturmasya is quite elaborate. During that time, the actual performance is that you eat once a day, and you only eat khichdi, or dal and rice together, and you eat it in a certain way. That is, you put your hands behind your back, and the bowl of khichdi is on the floor, and you put your head to the floor where the khichdi is, and you eat like that without using your hands. And then as soon as you come up, that's all you get. That's your whole meal for the day. And you do that for 4 months. Of course, we don't follow that. It's not recommended, nor is it necessary at all. I know one devotee, he followed it for 4 months. After 4 months, he got married. So that was the result of Chaturmasya. Anyway, that is not the requirement. So Srila Prabhupada wanted us to follow some parts of the Chaturmasya. So there is a restriction from green leafy vegetables for 1 month. So cooks should be very aware of this, not to
But these foodstuffs make them available for jhana devotees in general because they won't take them. So it's up to the cooks and the temple authorities to make sure. And all the devotees should be conscious if you see these things, don't take them. I mean, no spinach, anything that falls into the category of green leafy vegetables.
So that's right.
And one more. This is the hard one is yogurt, and the hard one is actually milk. Mm-hmm. Milk for 1 month. That's a real difficult one. Anyway, so that begins today. So today is also a very holy, auspicious day. It's the disappearance day of Srila Sanatana Goswami. Sri Rupa Sanatana Bhatta Raghuna, Sri Jivan Gopala Dasa Raghuna, Sat Goswami Ki Jaya. So these are the contemporaries of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, six renunciates who lived in the land of Vrindavan, and their entire bhajan was excavating the holy places of Krishna's pastimes and writing books on the philosophy and the pastimes of the Lord. And Srila Sanatana Goswami is one of the main contributors. In fact, he was the senior of all the Goswamis of Vrindavan. His writings, his teachings are also being very much explained within the Krishna Conscious Society. If you want some general information on Sanatana Goswami from the books, then go to Madhya Leela, Volume 1, Chapter 1. In that chapter, you'll find there's an explanation of Sanatana Goswami, his life and his contribution. So Sanatana Goswami remains, or is, one of the main teachers within our Krishna Consciousness Society. Some of his works were Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which was the after Maharaj Parikshit had heard from Sukadeva Goswami 7 days the essence of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, he was about to leave the planet. His mother, Uttar, had been running up to him and said, "My dear son, please, you have heard everything from Sukadeva Goswami. Tell me what he has heard. Or tell me what you have heard." And Maharaj Parikshit said, "My dear mother, I don't have time. I'm about to die at any moment, but I'll narrate the essence of what Sukadeva Goswami has told me." And that was the story of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is the essence of the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that book actually is available to the Gaudiya Mon and can be read. And it's also being translated by one disciple of Srila Prabhupada right now, who's working on the book. His name is Gopi Paranandana, which is one of the main scholars in our movement, and he's doing that book. And when I saw him last, he was halfway through the book. That was the beginning of this year. So hopefully soon the book will be available. That book is the cream of all Krishna conscious philosophy. It's also the story of Gopakumara. Those of you know Gopakumara story, that's also mentioned in that. Sanatana Goswami also wrote Hari Bhakti Vilas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Tell people how to act." In other words, show them how they should behave from day to day. What is Vaishnava etiquette? What is Vaishnava behavior? Start them off at the very beginning of when they get up in the morning. So Hari Bhakti Vilas is more or less the etiquette of Vaishnavas. The first thing you do in the morning, you pay your obeisances to the spiritual master, and you chant the name of the deity you're serving. Jai Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. And then you go to the restroom, and the first thing you do is brush your teeth. So that's the whole process of cleansing yourself in the morning, dressing yourself, putting on tilak, going to the temple, entering the temple, and all the etiquette that's necessary in order for Vaishnava to function. That was done by Sanatana Goswami in his Marakar Bhakti Vilas. And parts of that is translated by Tushagrata, so you can get that. And Sanatana Goswami also wrote a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam and other works. He wrote many, many volumes. So today we'll speak a little bit about the life of this great saint. First of all, I have to explain that I'm not at all qualified to speak on the life of Sanatana Goswami. It's not possible. His
glories are constantly being extolled by the Vaishnavas throughout India. He is, as one of the foremost of all the Goswamis, the personification of humility. His humility was so great that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in explaining, sometimes devotees like to imitate or follow certain great saints in their activities. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says there's four persons you cannot imitate, don't ever try. There's Sanatana Goswami for his humility, Haridas Thakur for his chanting 300,000 names every day, Ramananda Roy has his ability to be unaffected by female association, even in the most, what we say, difficult situations. And Damodar Pandit, who had the tendency to correct Lord Chaitanya. He would correct the Lord, teach the Lord how to act. And no one else could speak to the Lord and correct him except Damodar Pandit. Damodar Pandit. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport, explaining Chaitanya, we should not try to imitate any of these four, especially the humility of Sanatana Goswami. So we'll explain a little bit about his life. Sanatana Goswami was born in a very high-class Brahmin family, Saraswati Brahmin family, which is considered to be the topmost of all rabbinical births. He was the oldest son in the family. His father's name was Keshari Pandit. He had a younger brother who was Rupa Goswami, one of the six Goswami, and another brother that was named Anupam. So Chaitanya actually named him Anupam. His name was Balabha by birth, but Lord Chaitanya changed his name to Anupam. So these three brothers, of course, we understand that from Anupam, Jiva Goswami was born, one of the other six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So he was the nephew of Sanatana Goswami. So, they were born in very high-class Brahmin families, and they were very, very learned in the scriptures. Not only learned in the scriptures, but they knew so many languages. They could speak Persian, Urdu, so many languages. They were all very well learned, highly aristocratic. But during that time, in India, the Muslims had taken over. And so the Muslim rule was very, very prominent. And there was one Muslim whose name was Hussein Shah. But there's another one. I can't think. Huh? Nawab Hussein Shah. But there was he was the governor of the area, parts of the area of Bengal at that time. He had taken over by his military conquering ability in that area of Bengal. So he was always trying to subjugate the Hindu community to follow his rule. But it was difficult. So his superior, which I can't remember his name, told him that the only way you're going to get the Hindus to cooperate is you have to get Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and Anupam into your confidence. If you get them, everyone else will follow. So he was a very cruel ruler, this Nawab Hussein Shah. So he made a proposal. He went to Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Anupam. He said, I want you to become my ministers in my government. I have very high posts for you, and I want you to assist me in my governmental role. And if you don't, I will persecute you and the entire Hindu population. So you imagine working, someone who was born in a Hindu family, especially a high-class Brahmin, taking the service of Muslims. It's considered unheard of. Better to die than to have that kind of position. But they did it because, not because of their own fear, but they were afraid that if they did it, this very cruel ruler, he would persecute the entire Hindu community. And so in order to protect the Hindu community from persecution of this ruler, they took up the post. And not only did they take up the post, they became so expert in ruling the government that the Nawab was so pleased with their service that he gave them so much wealth, he gave them so much power and position. In fact, the government was working good without even the presence of the Nawab. He used to go out and do his conquering, and Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Anupam would take care of the treasury and administration and everything else. So, of course, this went on for many, many years, and in order to protect the Hindu community. At one time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, they were also great devotees of Lord Chaitanya at the time. So one time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to go to Vrindavan. He was in the area of Navadvipa. This was his first attempt to go to Vrindavan. But actually, it's not so much that he wanted to go to Vrindavan. It was an excuse. So he left Navadvipa. And with a very, actually, practically by himself, I think he took one servant with him, and he was traveling. And he reached the village of Ramakeli, which was the place of the seat of the government at that time. And Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, and Anupam were ruling the government then. Now during that time, the minister of the governor, he said there is this saint, a Hindu saint, he's going around and he's chanting God's name, and so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of followers, thousands of followers are coming. And it was explained that when Lord Chaitanya would go, people would come after him and just take dirt from where he had put his lotus feet. And the road was so full of holes, and people just taking dirt. There were so many thousands of people getting dirt from the lotus feet of the Lord wherever he stepped. This is the custom. And when a holy person places his foot anywhere, that place is considered a place of pilgrimage. That's why we worship the lotus feet of the Lord, we worship the lotus feet of the spiritual master. We take the dust of their lotus feet and we place it upon our head, and by doing that we actually receive great benefit.